Hello and welcome, welcome. Today is Friday, January 27th, 2012, and this is the Animal Voices Radio Show, broadcasting live from the control room at the Co-op radio station in Vancouver, BC, 102.7 FM CFRO. Animal Voices is Western Canada's only radio show dedicated solely to animal advocacy and compassionate living, airing for over 10 years in Vancouver. My name is Alyssa Ray. I'll be your host today, and I'm joined in studio by a few lovely humans. Firstly, Morgan Ahoff, who's on the controls today. And we have a new guest co-host, Elon Cohen. Thank you for joining us today.
Hi, Elon.
Thanks for having me.
And of course, last but not least, we have Ms. Allison Cole, whom we are all very grateful to, as she just filled our bellies with a delectable cruelty-free lunch. I, for one, love our cookbook review days.
Hello. Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes. Today, the book we're featuring is The Healthy Voyager's Global Kitchen, 150 plant-based recipes from around the world. Allison will be presenting her review shortly. Later, we'll call local activist and vegan superstar Melissa Balfour, who's making compassionate waves near the shores of the Fraser River in New Westminster, BC. Melissa Balfour founded the New Vegan Minster Project, which focuses on fun and friendly food events and restaurant outreach. Finally, to conclude our show today, we'll talk to Diane Vanderweel, a Fort St. James resident, that's rural BC for those who don't know, who's been caring for a goose named Lucy, who she rescued and rehabilitated 3 years ago. Recently, she ran into trouble from federal wildlife officers. Stay tuned to hear her story. First off, just over the past week, I attended a really amazing event. It was the Vancouver's premier screening of the new documentary, Vegucated. Allison, you weren't there, were you? No.
Well, I saw it last year at the AIR conference, and I had a meeting that night, so I didn't go this week. And I'm kind of glad I didn't, because as I heard, it was sold out to capacity, so someone who hadn't seen it before was able to take the seat I would have had, which is great. 275 people there at the Vancouver Public Library.
Yeah, they closed the doors right at 7 because it was totally packed, and then they opened them 10 minutes later, and 20 more people came in, and they brought out more chairs. It was really exciting to be in a room with so many conscious folk eager to be vegucated. Someone did actually ask the question after the screening of like who the audience was. About probably 70 to 80% of the people there were already vegan, vegetarian. And yeah, only 20 to 30% were omnivores.
But I do feel there's value in that, because once you've seen the film, like I have, when I get a chance, I'm going to buy the DVD and I'm going to lend it out to as many people as I can get to watch it who don't know about all this stuff yet. So I think it's great for people like, you know, like us who are aware of the issues to see the film so that they can recommend it to others and get it more out there. It's like an outward fan type effect,
for the premiere. That's kind of what you would expect, and if it had a mainstream run, wouldn't that be so exciting? Then we could all tell all our friends, but now we can tell them to download the DVD or purchase
you can
the
watch
movie
it on Amazon Instant Watch. Go to getvegucated.com, and there, it tells you all the ways you can watch it like instantaneously on your computer.
Good. I just kind of wanted to talk about why it makes an amazing animal advocacy film. It is directed towards a mainstream audience. There's a whole lot of humor. It's really funny. And the three people she follows, she challenges them to go vegan for 6 weeks. They're just kind of regular, everyday people with different challenges. She does focus quite a bit on sort of transitional foods, like processed kind of vegan quote-unquote junk food, which I think most people are curious to know when they're making the switch. And she kind of addresses the stereotypes of veganism, that it's something just for freaks, or vegans are from planet Vega and we're aliens, and she makes it really, really friendly. It is definitely a food film. There's a lot of focus on health and also the environmental argument, but it's primarily making the argument for ethical veganism and speaking out for animals. and it does cover factory farming 101. So it shows a lot of images of just common practices in farming. It's not egregious cruelty scenes. It's kind of quick clips, not enough that you would want to close your eyes and leave or anything. It's just enough to make an effect. And she also goes into organic, free-range farming, and even family farms, and how those are still really cruel. And she actually calls one of the people who works in a organic farm and asks them about their practices, and she's really disgusted with what she hears. And there was just some really memorable scenes when they're taken to the abandoned slaughterhouse. Do you remember that scene, Allison?
What I remember is they were taken there but ended up doing a chicken rescue that was unexpected while they were there. Is that right?
I think that's kind of two scenes that you blended together.
Yeah, that was there. They just went to see it and then they ended up rescuing some chickens. Yeah.
Yeah. It was really powerful. They went through this old abandoned slaughterhouse and then kind of like cut in quick scenes of like what really happens in the slaughterhouses. And that was really powerful.
Yeah, not everyone gets to visit a slaughterhouse as part of their education, right?
No doubt, yeah. Just an excellent screening, and I hope the movie reaches audiences far and wide. And Allison, you have a review for us.
Yeah, charged by my enthusiasm for a breadth of varying ethnic cuisines, I was excited to read from cover to cover and try out some of the recipes this week from the book The Healthy Voyager's Global Kitchen, 150 Plant-Based Recipes from Around the World, which is a brand new book hot off the vegan presses by the Healthy Voyager herself, Carolyn Scott Hamilton. So if you've been listening to my past book reviews on the show, you'll know that presentation is pivotal when it comes to making a good first impression on me for any cookbook that I choose to peruse. And I have to say that this book makes the cut when it comes to reading and absorbing each page by rich and colorful page of beautifully laid out recipes that invite and intrigue the unsatiated eye. One is met with thick, earthy toned paper stock adorned with delectable food photographs and a clear and consistent layout of recipe text, which actually also includes notable icons for each recipe in the top corner to indicate whether it's gluten-free, soy-free, low-fat, low-glycemic, kosher, and or raw. I found this feature to be really helpful when needing to find soy-free recipes for this week's testing. Now, this book features samplings of recipes from just about every ethnic cuisine you can think of. We've got recipes spreading the globe from Latin America to Italy to India to Africa. You'll find common dishes that we here in North America know, such as borscht from Russia and lasagna from Italy. But what you'll also largely discover is a huge sampling of recipes native to the countries featured that are not so well known here. And just reading about them is an educational lesson in its own. Examples of more exotic offerings, at least exotic to me, are the changua de carrito, that is the milk, egg, and cilantro stew from Colombia, the spicy plantains from Ghana, and the seitan steak and mushroom Roulade from Germany. The book even features some recipes that I grew up with in my British and South American household, and from examining their ingredients and methods, I have to say that it appears that the author was really going for straight authenticity with a twist, that being plant-based, when recreating these recipes to compassionate standards. Yes, as you might expect, a lot of these ethnic recipes are originally heavy on the meat, dairy, and eggs. And I think that Carolyn has successfully achieved veganizing the dishes by making plant-based substitutions that are as close to the original product as possible. So that means there's a lot of use of mock meats, tofu, and seitan in these alternative offerings to replace the traditional meat in dishes that primarily feature animal parts, such as fried beef and onions and sans coq au vin, that being not chicken and wine. But for those who aren't keen on the meat analogs, there are still plenty of traditionally plant-based items here for you to try out. As any vegetarian knows, ethnic cuisines are the best when scouting out traditional and tasty plant-based meals. I wanted to challenge my culinary skills when embarking on some recipe testing this week. Plus, I wanted a complimentary set of dishes to bring here for lunch today for my Animal Voices colleagues. So this is what I came up with. I made us a Chinese wonton soup to start, making my own wontons from scratch, followed by torta ahogada, which is a spicy beef sandwich from Argentina. And then for dessert, we had apple dziad, which is a Russian apple pastry. So soup, a sandwich, and dessert, I thought that would work out well. Plus, the first two recipes entailed having to use can. That is the very high-protein wheat meat that you can buy in the stores. But I chose to challenge my culinary skills and finally embark into the world of seitan making for this week's recipes using the seitan recipe from the book, which I've been wanting to do for a very long time, that is to make seitan. So I'm finally no longer a seitan virgin. So to start, what did you all think of the seitan?
I thought it was really tasty and satisfying. It wasn't. I could do with a little more zing, like flavor, but maybe it was. I don't know.
I think that's what the dipping sauce was, and I don't think your dipping sauce got as much adobo chili as mine did. I thought it was really spicy. What did you think, Elon? Your first time having seitan, and you too, Morgan.
Yeah, I really liked it. I thought it was already hearty, and it seemed to, filled me up. I'm pretty satisfied right now. I do agree, though, I probably could use more of a zing, and probably I should have taken more spicy sauce with that. But nonetheless, I definitely think it's a really good protein, a substitute for meat, and it gives you a lot of protein,
yeah.
So I liked it.
Yeah, Morgan, I know you're looking for high-protein, plant-based foods. What did you think of seitan for the first time?
Yeah, it was generally good to eat and satisfying. I found just that particular preparation of it, it seemed more like a topping, like sort of the top of a chili dog kind of thing, rather than the filling itself. And I think that might be partly because of the bun it was served on was just a little bit chewy, so it was kind of squishing the filling out. So perhaps there are other things you could do with that same recipe that would be a little more effective.
Disclaimer, I didn't use the right kind of buns that it said.
Oh, that explains it.
Couldn't find crusty rolls, but I thought they were pretty crusty. What about the wonton soup? That was my first time making wonton soup. Wontons are pretty easy to make, but they might be a little bit intimidating for the brand new cook, but just they're pretty easy. What did you guys think of wonton soup?
I was impressed. It looked like a tremendous amount of work.
Oh, it was. I spent 5 hours in the kitchen yesterday, and that wasn't counting the seitan, which took like hours and hours the day before. But apart from that, it was worth it.
I think so. I think it would impress guests. I would make that for if I was having people over for dinner or whatever. It's nice to have those just extra work meals to impress people, and that did it for me.
Well, that's as I was saying. You're saying, oh, you don't have to spend so much time. But if you don't spend the time making the food for your loved colleagues, who are you going to make it for, right? I wouldn't make this stuff for myself. And then the apple pastry, I think that was the least favorite of all the dishes on my part, and I think on all of your parts as well. And it didn't really look like the picture, but what did you guys think of that?
It was a bit bland, I found. I probably could have used more filling.
Oh, yeah.
I definitely found the main kind of substance of it to be not so sweet. It was just kind of, it was there, really.
It's probably an acquired taste, like for people maybe from that region of Russia, that it would take them back home.
It's basically a sweetbread sandwich with apple jam in the middle and raisins.
Marmalade, very bitter.
Yeah. Oh, and some marmalade, because you're right, there wasn't enough jam as for what the recipe said, so I had to add in some emergency orange marmalade. So to conclude, I highly do recommend this book for the experienced and or adventurous cook who wants to delve into a delightful hodgepodge of otherworld cuisine. You will be impressed at the variety and quality of recipes that this multicultured plant-based compilation has to offer.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour. Support your independent local community radio station, Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO. Become a member today by calling 604-684-8494. Whatever you can give makes a difference. We are counting on you to stand up for independent media. 604-684-8494. And thank you so much.
I learned about the Vegan Minster Project, the new Vegan Minster Project, when I saw the front cover of the New West Newsleader. The article title was Vegan Tastes Going Mainstream, and there was a big picture of Melissa Balfour, and we're pleased to have her as a guest on the line today. Thank you for being with us, Melissa.
Thank you for having me.
Hey, oh. Melissa. It's Allison.
Hi.
Your long-lost friend.
So, first of all, Melissa, can you just give us a rundown? What is the new Vegan Minster Project? Tell us about how you came up with the idea and what's going on.
I basically was kind of looking for a cause, and I knew that I really wanted to make somewhat of a difference in the world, but to me, the world seemed like a huge, daunting place. So I thought, I really enjoy the community I live in, and there's a lot of resources here, so why don't I start with where I live, with my own backyard, so to say. So I came up with this project where I'm basically one girl, one restaurant at a time in one city, and I decided to just showcase and highlight some of the different restaurants and different opportunities that people have to include plant-based whole foods into their lifestyle, whether it is going out or whether it's finding some great ingredients in the local grocery stores.
Awesome. It's such a wonderful idea. So you've had some success thus far with restaurant outreach. Can you tell us about some of the restaurants you've enlightened?
Sure. One of my favorites is the Coming Home Cafe, which is like a breakfast and lunch spot on 6th Street. I was there today, actually, and somebody walked in and ordered the tofu scramble, which is just nice. So exciting to me when people walk in and order tofu. And the chef, Michael, he's actually a native of Louisiana. So when I approached him with the whole tofu and diet cheese, he was a little skeptical at first, thinking, like, no one else but, you know, Melissa's going to order this off the menu ever.
Did he know you already, or were you just a crazy vegan going in?
He didn't really know me. I've kind of gotten to know him a bit better over the past year and a half that I've been going there, and now I'm just really close to all the people in the cafe. So it was kind of like a little weird for him to be like, I don't know what she's talking about. And of course, I don't think he'd actually cooked tofu before, so that was a bit of an issue. But he started putting it on the menu, and lo and behold, people started ordering it. And it just, like, the smile on my face is so huge when I'm sitting there and people are like, I'll have the tofu scramble. And I'm like, yay.
It should be named after you. Melissa's
awesome.
Scramble.
I will campaign for that.
That's wonderful. And you also, I don't think there's many places to buy crepes in Metro Vancouver, but now there is.
With LA and Lily at Crepe de Zemi at the River Market, I was actually working at a little store right beside them. And just, like, I love crepes. I'm a French background, and it's just, like, the idea of seeing the crepes there being made and just all the beautiful fillings. And I just basically spent about a month just eyeing the crepes and giving them really sad puppy dog eyes and kind of harassing them in a really nice way over Twitter and saying, hey, you know, when are you going to feed me? I'm really hungry. I want crepes. And so all I asked for was them to do, like, a vegan batter so that, you know, you can mix and match. Most of the ingredients are vegan.
It's so easy to make crepes and pancakes that don't have eggs or milk in them or whatever it is that people put in them.
Yeah. And Lily is also, she's Malaysian, so she's lactose intolerant herself, and she also knows a lot of people who are lactose intolerant. So it kind of fit in with them anyway to make a batter that didn't have dairy in it. And so me just expecting them to make a batter because they said they would give it a try, they ended up creating an entire vegan menu and incorporating Daiya cheese and that soy nut butter that tastes like peanut butter and vegan chocolate chips. And, like, they just went crazy. And it was amazing to see how excited they were and how grateful they were when the vegan community and people who wanted more of a plant-based diet started supporting them too. It's really been a treat to watch.
Melissa, I know you've invited me to go there with you, and we haven't had a chance to make that happen yet. I'm actually going there this Sunday, but I think you're going to be busy maybe that day. I was going to ask you. Anyways, I went to happycow.net this week and looked at the reviews for Crepe des Amis, and there's so many good reviews on how they have sweet and savory vegan crepes.
Yeah.
And then I asked my sister, who I'm going to be with, do you want to go for crepes, vegan crepes? And she's like, yeah, totally, because I never get to have them.
Yay.
Right? So we are going. If you're free, you're invited. So, but we can chat about that later.
Cool.
But yeah, and that's because of you. I'm gonna let my sister know too. This is because Melissa. We can eat in New Westminster.
You have some resources on your website, don't you, about like to give to restaurants that you're approaching? You probably have, you know, different approaches with each place, but can you tell us a bit about how to make an impact on a restaurant? And
I think first it really starts with a relationship with either an owner or the chef. And you have to make it clear that you're not coming in there and trying to railroad their menu, or that you're being you're trying to push what your values are on them. And it's just basically talking to them about including a whole new set of people that would make a positive impact on their budget and on their business.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, to me, approaching a restaurant, it's you have to keep in mind what they're facing and how hard it is to have a restaurant business in this kind of economy. And I really want to make sure that the ingredients that I suggest or ways to make things different are economical for them, and that they're not, there's not going to be a waste. So like something like diet cheese is great because you can put it into smaller bags and freeze it, and then it doesn't go bad. So it, and then they can take it out per serving if they want, or you know, they can mix around menu items that they've already got in order to create a different vegan meal. So you have to be kind of careful on how you approach them and just make it as friendly and welcoming and positive an experience as possible. And you make new friends out of it, which is really exciting.
I think having a charming personality would help a lot.
Maybe, I guess.
People skills, right?
Goes a long way. Speaking of people skills and being friendly, can you tell us a bit about the bike tour? And your plans with doing that?
Oh, right. Last summer, I thought, I've got all these great resources in the U.S., so it would be amazing to spend like 4 hours and visit each one. And then I love my bike, so I thought, oh, I'll do it by bike. And then I thought, well, maybe other people would want to do it. And it was total lark. Like, I was like, let's just see if other people would want to do it. So I kind of...
Such a crazy type of event to have, right?
It was kind of funny. And then I just kind of set it up, and I went around, and I talked to all the different businesses, and I asked them, like, what they could offer for, like, a decent price. And then I kind of threw an itinerary together, posted it on the website, put it out there on Twitter, and then 2 days later, I'd sold out and had a waiting list. I was like, oh, other people are like me and also want to go around and eat for 4 hours. So
While riding their bikes.
Who would have thunk? And I was like, rain or shine, guys. We're in Vancouver. We will go if it rains. And everyone did. Everyone came.
Awesome. And it didn't rain, did it?
No, it was clear exactly for those 4.5 hours. Nice. And then afterwards it started to rain. It was amazing.
Are you going to be doing another one? Because I was out of town that day. I really wanted to go. And
I am. Yeah, I'm going to do like different themed ones too, and do like Asian fusion and like maybe do a sweets one and just kind of do like different ideas probably throughout the summer. Maybe not like every weekend, but maybe every other weekend.
That's a wonderful idea. Yeah. Awesome. I look forward to hearing more about that. Most recently, you had a special dessert night, the Sinfully Divine Dessert Experience pop-up restaurant. Can you tell us about that experience?
Sure. I really wanted to do kind of a dessert buffet that was completely dairy and egg-free. And who better to approach than Ashley McLean from Sprout Vegan Bakery, because she is a culinary master.
My favorite.
She's a huge fan. And at first I approached her just thinking that she might want to do some of the desserts, and then I'd find other people to fill in. And she was like, nope, I'm doing them all. And I was like, wow, you're amazing. And so we found a location, the Coming Home Cafe, and I just decided to kind of remake it into a fancy, luxurious event. And we had a dessert night that was a full-on with, like, Black Forest cake and tiramisu and the vegan cheesecakes and cupcakes. It was amazing. We had one table who actually almost finished the entire desserts, which was a feat of its own, to be honest.
Wow. That's really impressive. I'm really glad that went well. Do you plan on doing sort of pop-up restaurant idea in the future? Or?
I think so. I think there might be a couple other things. I'd really like to do a vegan wine and cheese night at the local winery.
Nice.
So I think that's probably going to happen maybe at the end of March. So just I want to do what my goal is with this thing is to introduce people who maybe aren't necessarily living a plant-based lifestyle into a fun, friendly atmosphere where they can try new things and be like, you know what, this isn't half bad. I can incorporate some of this into my lifestyle and just kind of start it from plant the seeds, so to say.
What better way to do that than just start off with vegan desserts, right?
Yeah, I know.
There are, of course, a whole bunch of restaurants in New Westminster that still need a little loving hand.
Totally.
I saw the list on your website. Are you looking for help with this project from other residents or...?
Not at the moment. I think in terms of help, I think that if you're going to go out for dinner, it's great to support the local small restaurants where the businesses, the owners put their heart and soul into what they make. And I think in order to help my project, if people go in and order plant-based, Whole Foods meals, that's awesome. And that just makes it even easier for me to pitch the idea to people.
Mm-hmm. And maybe even to like leave special thank you notes for having vegan things, like just for that human touch.
Totally.
Yeah. So what drives you to do this sort of vegan outreach? What's the motivation behind your actions? You want to make a difference. Do you consider this work activism or
just a fun hobby?
I do. Both. Mostly I'm hungry all the time now. I love food. No. It's kind of my way of promoting a healthier lifestyle and just trying to lessen the effects on the environment that our meat production and dairy production has. And I also was at Veducated, and just to see those factory farms and the way the animals are treated, and if I can convince, you know, one restaurant to start doing tofu scrambles and diet grilled cheese sandwiches, that just means that other people will have the option to try it and maybe not have eggs that day or not have, you know, dairy sandwich with ham or something in it. And I think to me that's really important, is just to try to introduce those different types of dishes to people so that, you know, one day maybe we won't be so reliant on the meat and dairy industry in order to feed our people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, one meal at a time, making a difference. That's commendable. Speaking of making a difference, I just want to touch on a bit from your past. I know that you won the Program of Excellence Award from the BCSPCA a few years ago. Can you tell us a bit about that?
Sure. I was the Biscuit Fund Coordinator, so I managed a fund that primarily raised money to help the injured homeless animals in the shelters across British Columbia. So anytime an animal came in with a broken leg or required any sort of surgery that was quite above and beyond what the shelter budgets could handle, basically I would add them to our website, the Biscuit Fund website, and have people sponsor the animals, and that money went towards their medical care. So It was a really great program, and it generated a lot of publicity, and the reaction I received from donors and the public was immensely positive. The whole work was just wonderful and really heartlifting, and just very, very good work to do.
And the Biscuit Fund was your idea?
It wasn't my idea. It was the idea of the general manager of revenue development at the time, Simon Trevelyan.
Yeah.
And when I came on board, it was just fledgling. It just started. I think they had maybe raised about $100,000 in their first year. And it was basically kind of like a little after note on a brochure. Like, mm-hmm. It didn't really have a presence at all. And then I just kind of came on board. And luckily, Simon was an amazing manager, and he just kind of let me have creative reins and let me go crazy. And I ended up, in the 4 years that I ran the program, I made them $1.4 million.
Wow.
And I worked part-time, so that's,
that's
the kind of crazy part, is I only worked 5 hours a day, so it was pretty good.
Wow, that's amazing, yeah. Melissa. Thank you so much for sharing the work that you do. We're going to stay tuned, and we know we'll see great things from you in the years to come. If people want to learn more about the project, how can they do that?
They can visit my blog at thehungrytourist.com.
Lovely, lovely. And thank you again for joining us.
Thanks, Melissa.
You're welcome.
You are listening to the Animal Voices Radio Show on 102.7 FM CFRO, Vancouver Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. And I have our upcoming events for you now. Tomorrow, Saturday, January 28th, starting at 6 p.m., Stop UBC Animal Research will be having a vegan potluck fundraiser. This is happening at 4705 West 6th Avenue in Vancouver. This fundraiser is happening in conjunction with a 50th birthday party for the director of the group, Brian Vincent. And if you're listening, Brian, happy birthday. And Brian doesn't want presents. He just wants your donations to Stop UBC Animal Research to support the good work they are doing to bring awareness and put a stop to the ongoing animal research at the University of British Columbia. So if you would like to attend this fundraiser event, everyone's invited. Please bring a vegan dish to share and a donation for Stop. And if you are going to be attending the event, you can RSVP on Facebook or email stopubcanimalresearch@gmail.com to RSVP as well. I'm going to be attending. Elon, did you say you're going?
I'm going, yes.
Awesome. I will see you there, and hopefully the rest of you, too. So, Sunday, January the 29th, this weekend, from 12:30 to 4:30 p.m., it's Tropics in January, which is a cupcake party hosted by Nice Shoes Vegan Shoe Store. This is happening at their store at 3568 Fraser Street in Vancouver. Nice Shoes is teaming up with Fairy Cakes and Pretty Parties, run by Melissa Belfour, who we just spoke to bring you Tropics in January. Fairy Cupcakes, which is a local vegan cupcake business, will be selling and sampling tropical-themed cupcakes, including gluten-free varieties, and Pretty Up Parties, which is a party decor business, will transform the store into a tropical paradise. So get your shades on and leave your winter blues at the door. Who knows, there may even be a crazy sale that day. Are you guys going? Anyone?
It's kind of awkward when you ask us on air, but I think I have to work. I usually have to work.
That's fine.
It sounds like so much fun, though.
I missed their last one. So, like that, they had a cupcake party in December, which sounded like so much fun. So, I'm actually going to take a day off work this week, which never happens. And I'm just going to have fun all day, starting with cupcakes.
Good for you. You deserve it.
Thank you. Let's see here. We have some more time. So, Wednesday, February the 1st, from 5 to 7 p.m. will part two of the thematic series called Bringing the Collective Together, Non-Human Animals, Humans, and Practice at the University will be happening, and that's hosted by Green College at UBC. This is happening at the Coach House at Green College, which is located at 6201 Cecil Green Park Road at UBC in Vancouver. This series probes the questions of the value for humans of medical research on non-human animals, the value for non-human animals, and the role of culture and corporate interest in discourses on human disease and security. Each speaker will speak for 15 minutes, followed by 30 minutes of discussion. The speakers for this session will include Fabio Rossi, from Canada Research Chair in Regenerative Medicine from the Medical Genetics Department at UBC, Bill Milsom, who's from the Zoology Department at UBC, Nellie Oersberg, who is from Obstetrics and Gynecology at UBC, and Dan Weary from the Animal Welfare Program at UBC. Space is extremely limited, so please arrive early to make sure you get a spot. And if you might remember, if you're a regular listener of the show, for their first part one of this series that they had last year in the fall, I did attend that. I am going to be attending this one as well, and I reported back on it. We actually had a conversation on the phone with Dr. Laura Genera, and who is one of the coordinators of this series. And that can actually be heard if you go onto our website, animalvoices.org, and do a search for Laura Genera. And I think this will be, it was a really, really fruitful discussion. I think it's just great to get this type of discussion out as a public forum, and I look forward to attending this one as well. Again, this is another event that's literally in my own backyard, so I'll definitely be attending it. And I think that's all we have time for right now. So if you have an animal-friendly event that you would have like to have announced on the show, please email us the details at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com, or you can post it on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver.
Accordion Noir, your favorite Squeezebox show, celebrates its move to Wednesday evenings from 10 to 11 p.m. The boys with the bellows, Accordion Noir co-hosts Rowan and Bruce, squeeze the sounds from every continent into the weirdest accordion show on Earth. And that's saying something. Accordion Noir, Wednesdays from 10 to 11 p.m. on CFRO Co-op Radio 102.7 FM, Vancouver. Or you can hear us anytime at accordionnoir.org.
You are listening to the Animal Voices radio show, and here is our guest co-host, Alon Cohen, with the news for you today.
OK,
Canada's seal hunt has received increased criticism this month, as new evidence released at the beginning of January demonstrates that death rates among seal pups had dramatically increased due to thinning winter sea ice. A study by scientists at Duke University showed that since 1969, ice cover has fallen by as much as 6% every decade. Female harp seals depend on stable winter sea ice as a safe place to give birth and nurse their young. As a result of the decreasing ice cover, up to 80% of the seal pups born in 2011 were thought to have died due to a lack of ice. David Johnston, research scientist at the Duke University Marine Lab, said that it may take years of good ice and steady population gains to make up for the heavy losses sustained during the recent string of bad ice years in eastern Canada. As a result of the study, the International Fund for Animal Welfare reported that this new study illustrates how it is time for the Canadian government to face the reality that commercial sealing is neither viable nor necessary. In China, more than 1,500 dogs were found piled on top of one another inside a truck bound for a 22-hour journey to a chain of dog meat restaurants. On January 19th, animal welfare volunteers and police discovered the malnourished and dehydrated animals loaded inside cages so small they couldn't even stand up. The event demonstrates the incredible power of social media and the internet, as a local blogger behind the rescue operation had seen the truck carrying the animals and posted a plea on the web, begging for help in saving the dogs' lives. It was answered by animal welfare volunteers, and with the assistance of the police, they intercepted the vehicle at a toll gate. Many of the dogs, which were being taken to the Guangdong province in the far south of the country, were saved. The United States Supreme Court ruled unanimously last Friday that a California law requiring, quote, downer livestock to be euthanized had overstepped the state's constitutional authority. Downer livestock is a term used to describe animals that can no longer stand on their own and are therefore killed for reasons of both promoting animal welfare in the slaughter industry and for keeping sick animals out of the food supply. In 2009, California enacted a ban on selling or slaughtering downer animals in response to undercover footage showing animal handlers abusing cows in a San Bernardino County slaughterhouse. The video, released by the Humane Society, sparked consumer outrage and led to the nation's largest ever meat recall, as downer cows are at a huge risk for mad cow disease. The California law, which the massive profit-making pork industry took to the Supreme Court, required meat processors to euthanize downed animals immediately and applied it to pigs, goats, and sheep, unlike the federal law, which prevents only downed cows from being slaughtered. The Federal Meat Inspection Act, however, prohibits states from enacting laws that differ or are stricter than the federal law. The Supreme Court ruling highlights the repercussions for states that wish to move toward reducing animal cruelty, promoting food security, and challenging huge industries such as that of pork. In Washington, D.C., lawmakers have composed H.R. 3798, the Egg Products Inspection Act amendments of 2012. The bill will force farmers using cages to phase in larger cages over an 18-year period and will also create a new labeling system for eggs called Enriched in an attempt to deflect public concern about cage-free hens. The Humane Farming Association, the HFA, announced its opposition to the renamed Rotten Eggs Bill on Friday. United Egg Producers claimed that this legislation would eventually result in progress for laying hens, said Bradley Miller, National Director of the Humane Farming Association. In reality, the egg industry merely agreed to slowly continue the meager changes in battery cage conditions that are already occurring due to state laws and public pressure. Hens will still not be able to get proper exercise, they still will be too crowded to even properly stretch their wings, and the nest boxes will not be conducive to needs of laying eggs. The bill proposes a mere 8 square inch adjustment to battery cages, from 116 to 124 square inches per hen, phased in over 18 years. The bill's own proponents have stated that a hen needs at least 216 square inches just to spread her wings. The Humane Farming Association maintains that cruelty is cruelty and that there is no such thing as an enriched battery cage. To see what you can do and read more about the proposed legislation going on in the US, you can visit stoptherotteneggbill.org. And that's been your news for January 28, 2012.
Thank you so much for that, Elon. And now for a story about a lucky goose named Lucy and her happy ending. The story actually made it to the National Post and the Vancouver Sun and many others. So Diane Vanderweel joins us now on the phone from Fort St. James, BC, to tell us about how she saved Lucy's life twice. Thanks for joining us on Animal Voices, Diane.
Thank you, and good morning.
Good morning to you. So first, can you take us back to that summer day? Was it 3 years ago or two?
It was 2.5 years ago.
when you first encountered Lucy, I understand you were driving and then something caught your eye.
Yes, she was a little bright yellow ball of fluff on the road. Mm-hmm. And on a dirt road, it was really hot that day. And we watched her from a back. We knew it was a little bird of some type, but we didn't know what, and we were watching it to see if she would reunite with her mother or whatever, and she was just getting weaker as we watched on the road.
Mm. And then you saw an eagle, did you?
Yes, there was an eagle also watching this little bird, and so we chose to pick it up. After watching it for about half an hour.
Mm-hmm. And then you brought her home with you?
Yep. We brought her home. We put her in a trunk, an older trunk we have, and put a light on her. We nursed her back where she was strong again, because she was pretty weak. We didn't even know if she was going to make it.
And did you know that she was a goose at that point, or when did you figure that the ball of fluff was a goose?
We had no idea. We didn't know if it was a duck or you know. It wasn't until she started getting her little feathers on her wings, and she was growing a lot faster than the chicks. We raise our own chickens, and and then we realized, well, this is a goose.
A Canada goose, yeah?
Yes, yeah. A Canadian goose.
Oh, wow. And so she lived with you for a number of years. Can you tell us about her life with your family and how she fit in?
You bet. She chose to be friends with our four. We have four small dogs, and mm-hmm. her interaction with us, people coming in and out of the yard. She fed on her natural foods in the back of our property, and wouldn't get close to other geese, but she knew, I'd walk her up to the field and stuff, but yeah, she's just become I don't like to use the term pet, but she's become
a companion.
Yes.
A friend. So I understand it wasn't your intention to raise her like as a pet. You did try to reintroduce her and to try and teach her that she was a goose and she should probably be with geese.
Yes, we did. We walked her to the fields in our back and surrounding areas to show her other geese. We got her as close as we could and to see if she would interact. We've brought her to ponds and to see if she went in swimming, but she would never know to go near the other geese or the ducks. We placed a big mirror outside many times to show her, you're a goose, you're not a chicken, and she just admired herself for hours.
Aww.
We have geese flying overhead, and she would just cock her head and look up, and no interest at all.
Mm-hmm. She could fly, though, correct?
She can fly, yes, and she's flown. She's gone for a night. She goes to a neighbor of ours. He's got a pond in the back of his yard, and she's overnighted in there.
Yeah. But she comes back to you in the morning.
Yep, she comes home. She lands on the roof, and then she's honking at the door to let us know that she's back.
Yeah. And she has her own little barn outside, and she also comes inside. Is that right?
Yes, she has her own accommodations outside. She has her own barn, and that's regulations. I've got my aviculture permit now.
Okay.
And when she wants to come in, she comes. She honks at the door. We open it. She comes in, lays by the fire with my dogs, and happy little bird she is.
Oh, nice. That sounds lovely. Can you tell us a bit about the unexpected visitors you got about 2 weeks ago?
Yes. I looked down the driveway. A blue truck opened the gate, drove down. walked past with my husband. He went up to meet them and said they had a complaint that we had a Canada goose, and they were here to confiscate her. And I verbally let up a fight. Nope, they're not taking her. And it was either me going to jail. They told me I would go to jail, or they would come back for the bird anyway.
You know what, when I read this story last night, it just really it made tears come to my eyes. I've had companion chickens when I was growing up, and just to think of the fear that just must have been going through you when this was happening, can you describe that a little bit?
Yes, you know what, at first when they said she was going to go to Prince George and long-term facility there, we could see her at any time, I think he was just, those words to appease me, because I was I was so upset. But, I was mortified that we had taken her and, you know, not intentionally domesticated her, always gave her every option to go as she pleased and to integrate her into the wild on her own. And she opted to stay, you know, to be friends with my dogs and, you know. So when I heard of all of this and, you know, having her for, she was a day or two old, you know, to euthanize her was just, it was ludicrous.
So you found out that after they did take her, that that the facility that took her probably wouldn't let you visit, and it wasn't a long-term facility after all?
Right. I did call them and the next day, and they had received Lucy, and they did not have long-term facilities for her. And I was told that I could visit her, and I wasn't allowed to go there to see her. And she was put in a stall there with, she could not fly, so that's where she was held for 5 days. She was put into captivity.
Mm-hmm. And let's just back up a bit. Why did the officers take her? What regulation were you violating?
I was in my possession of a migratory bird. Mm-hmm. I don't think they did their paperwork or footwork. That's being investigated now, because had they have done that, they would have seen that she was a free bird. Mm-hmm. She was not held captive at all. And, you know, she, it was of her own choosing, you know. And I realize, you know, that she's imprinted herself on me in her first couple of months,
right.
You know, and I'm sorry for that. It didn't matter if I wore a mask on my face or whatever, that wouldn't have stopped.
According to the officers, what should you have done when you saw Lucy lying helpless in the road?
Well, what they said we should have done was stepped on her. And we were appalled. And, you know, these are our wildlife conservation, and there was no way. If you could see Lucy, she fit in the palm of your hand. She was a few ounces, and, yeah, there was no way.
Hmm. Wow, I can't believe they said that. That's sad. So what happened next? She was taken away from you, and what did you do?
She was taken away, and the only thing I knew was to, after making several phone calls and being disregarded, I went to Facebook, and my family member had started a Bring Lucy Home page, and I was vigil. I wrote my story, and I asked my friends to help, and before you knew it, there was thousands on Facebook page supporting Lucy with her plight and not to be euthanized.
Yeah, you reached out far, and you wrote letters also to the government, to
yes.
MLAs and stuff, and
letters were sent to Honorable Minister of Environment Peter Kent,
mm-hmm.
Rob Stark, all our MLAs all over, any and all of government officials that addresses, emails we could get our hands on.
Wow, and people really stepped up to support you. Was that surprising to you, the amount of support that you got?
We were overwhelmed. I have been reunited with schoolhood friends and met people from all over the world on this Facebook with well wishes, and you know what, these beautiful, beautiful people.
Wow. And now, can you tell us about the Facebook page? It's still up, and I know there's been a couple updates recently with the media coverage. Is it called Bring Lucy Home? Is
that yeah.
It? Yeah. And that's how it all kind of started, the outreach efforts?
Yes.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep. And I keep them updated. They want to know daily what's happening. With the news media, any radio stations, because we've done a lot of them. I'm doing a video. I'm in the makes of Lucy, and I'm going to put it on YouTube, and I'll let everybody know when it's up there. To show off this beautiful girl that they helped save.
Yeah. What's lovely about this story is that it is a happy ending. So 2 weeks after she was taken from your home, how did she come back home?
It was on a Friday day. I had gone into town to fill an application for my aviculture license. A wonderful Saul Schneider helped me with that. And Peter Kent called our house on Friday and said that she will not be going to a long-term facility. He said he was sorry to put our family through this, that she should have never been removed and put into captivity. And he said she will be home Monday. We were elated. And thank you, Peter Kent, Rob Stark, wonderful man.
Yeah, and Peter Kent, again, is the Honorable Minister of Environment federally.
Yeah.
Wow, that's amazing.
And
that
I read
called.
That he's going to come and visit Lucy the next time he's in your town, right?
Yes, he said, you know, he'd love to come. He's in a couple of months. And I told him, you are very welcome, sir.
I hear you have some animals around you.
I do.
Is Lucy there with you right now, by any chance?
Lucy is sitting out in the deck, one of her favorite spots. I have a little pile of hay there. She likes to sit out and watch the other birds and stuff. I was just out there before this. She's watching a grouse out there.
Nice. So we'll definitely keep in touch with you on Facebook, and we look forward to seeing the video. We'll post it on our website as well when you share it.
Beautiful.
And yeah, I just want to thank you for sharing Lucy's story today. It's really touching. I can I can't wait to see the video, and it sounds like she's a real lucky bird to have met someone like you.
Thank you very much. She's a lucky girl to have all these angels coming to her aid on Facebook.
A community mm-hmm. effort for sure.
Thanks for sharing your story with us, Dan.
Yeah, have a lovely day.
Thank you, ladies.
Take care. So our hour is drawing to a close. Gracious thanks for listening to Animal Voices today. Remember, our show is only as effective as the number of listeners we have. So please share your love, spread the word, tell your friends. The volunteers who put together the shows each week work really hard to speak out on behalf of animals, and we need your help to reach a wider audience. We have a group page on Facebook where we give notices about upcoming shows and alert members when our podcasts are available. That's Animal Voices Vancouver. And we tweet weekly from Animal Voices YVR. At animalvoices.org, you'll find our past shows and videos related to our topics. Get automatic downloads of the show by subscribing on our website or on iTunes. We welcome your feedback and suggestions. Please email us at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. And you're listening to 102.7 FM CFRO, Cooperative Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Co-op Radio is 100% listener-sponsored. We rely on your donations and memberships to keep doing what we do. Visit cooperadio.org to learn about how to become a member, or call 604-684-8494. Membership is totally flexible. You can purchase a one-time yearly membership for pretty much any amount, or something that helps just a little more is the monthly donation. I myself give just $5 a month, and that's $60 that I don't even feel at all in a year. So yeah, I highly recommend becoming a member of Co-op Radio so that all these marginalized voices can continue to be heard. Next week on Animal Voices, we will feature an interview with Glenn Gates of Liberation BC. Glenn's organizing this year's Animal Advocacy Camp, an unconference in Vancouver, all about bringing the community together to share knowledge about being an effective voice for animals. This conference is community-led, and so everyone needs to bring their own ideas about which topics they want to discuss and workshops they want to host. I'm really excited about this.
It's a fantastic conference. We've only had one before, and it was just it was the greatest thing ever for animal advocacy in Vancouver. So we've never had something like that before.
Yeah, I'm so excited. I'm actually maybe trying to work up the courage to host a workshop. And Allison, did you want to announce a giveaway maybe?
Yeah, something I forgot to do before. So actually, just to announce what our feature interview will be next week, which kind of coincides with our book giveaway, is we'll be interviewing the Healthy Voyager herself, Carolyn Scott Hamilton, and she'll be here to give us tips and advice on compassionate vegetarian and traveling, plus more. So as you might have heard before, I gave a review earlier in the show of her book, The Healthy Voyager's Global Kitchen, 150 Plant-Based Recipes from Around the World, and we do have a copy to give away to a lucky listener. So a couple ways you can enter. If you go on our Facebook page, which is Animal Voices Vancouver, I have posted a link on there today where you can make your entry to be in this draw. So in order to be eligible to enter the draw, you just must not have won anything from us in the last year, and you must be able to pick up the book, your prize, from our station in downtown Vancouver. So in order to enter the draw, just tell us what one of your favorite ethnic dishes is. You can also email us your entry at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We are going to be doing the draw next week, so that is Friday, February the 3rd, and the deadline for entries is next Friday, February the 3rd at 9 a.m., so good luck on that.
We're going to leave you with a song called The Goose Song by the Pigpen Theater Company. They're basically a boy band of indie folk theater. Really exciting, and the song is great. Heartfelt gratitude to you for spending the hour with us. Remember to always be kind to the animals.
Mountain tops covered with snow. Always been as far below me as the bottom of the ocean deep. Any old fish that you could be, ain't it funny that all we have, bringing the gusts of wind.
rain on me.